Episode 232, Excavating the X-Files, Part 5.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono, and guess what, everyone? We're back.
Finally back. Now, we promised this episode weeks ago.
Yeah.
Different things happen, sicknesses, weather-related issues, and here we are.
It's kind of funny how these things work out, because, you know, when we did the last X-Files episode, we were kind of debating, well, should we do another one, you know, back-to-back? Well, it turns out we kind of got either the best or worst of both worlds. We are doing it back-to-back, but in this case, back-to-back happens to be a three-week break.
I would say there's one negative to what happened, and
yes,
we talked about this off there, but I was prepared to do these episodes 3 weeks ago.
Right.
No, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
And so I watched those episodes then. So to be honest, they're not fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
I've looked through my notes to prepare myself here, but I think I might have to do a little more reading than I usually do just to keep up on things. So I'm really glad we only did four.
I thought I took notes.
Oh, here we go. Now, remember, I tried to get you to do six.
Yeah.
After we had that week off, I was like, maybe we should just add two more. But I'm glad we didn't, because it's going to be a little bit of work to spark up memories of what. Keep listening, everybody. Keep listening.
Yeah, this is a bad sign. Everyone just turned off. But you want to listen for two reasons.
I do have my what do we know so far section.
Okay.
So we're going to add to the mythology. And I do have some cool additional notes that I learned online on Wikipedia.
Yeah. You should at least go to the X-Files wiki.
Yeah, I know. I should.
At least make that extra effort.
I just found out it existed today.
Yeah.
I've
been going there the entire time.
Oh, well, good. You cover that. I'll cover the real life stuff.
Don't remember anything I read off of
it. I just looked at it today. So go ahead, Ben. What were you going to say?
But yeah, then we've got a great real life X-File. I know I dropped the ball last time, but I'm back with one of the oddest and probably most amusing ones we'll have in this run. And then a great sci-fi Christian story time.
All right. Well, then I think it's time to excavate. Not
escalate. Yeah.
Not escalate. That's totally different. So are you ready to excavate?
Let's do it.
It's time to excavate.
All right, Ben. Let's tell the episodes that we did. Do you remember them, or do you want me to tell them?
I have no idea which ones we did. I remember the content. I don't remember the names.
We did episode 24 of season 3, Talitha Kumi.
Yeah.
And then right after that, the two-parter, which ended up becoming episode 1 of season 4, Harem Volk.
Yeah.
Then later in season 4, we covered episodes 8 and 9, Tunguska and Terma.
Yes.
So, as we do every time we do these episodes, we kind of slowly look through each episode. When they're two-parters, we can kind of talk about them as a whole, even though I have individual notes on each of the episodes. Then, but what we're really trying to figure out is, what do we know so far about this mythology? Does it all hold up together? If you're an X-Files fan, I think it's a good way to just look through the show as a whole, taking out just the mythology episodes and seeing if it holds up after all these years.
Yeah.
So should we take it away with Talitha Kumi episode, or the last episode of season 3, where we meet Jeremiah Smith, who can heal people?
Yes, he can.
Now, do you want to just give him a brief rundown of what happens in this episode?
Well, there's some bees, and they sting on an electrical guy.
No.
Is that the next episode?
That's the next one.
Okay, so Jeremiah Smith.
This one opens in the mall food court.
Yeah.
A guy just decides to lose it and shoots people.
Yeah.
And then this nice, calm old man just touches them and heals them. So, what do we know so far? We find out that later this guy is
But he disappears.
Out later this guy is a shape-shifting alien. So, we now know that the aliens, they have the power to heal with touch.
Yeah.
They can heal humans, at least.
Right.
I don't know if they can heal their own kind.
You'd think eventually we'd develop those powers, don't you?
I don't know.
I mean, that would be a natural next step for technology.
No, that's not true. That doesn't make any sense.
No, if we're going to... No. It's that if we're going to develop the ability to fly across the galaxy, like I'm thinking from the aliens' perspective.
Okay, yeah.
Developing the ability to heal with a touch would probably be a good next research
like maybe
product.
That's something we should put more at the forefront of the study.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Interestingly, at the very top of this episode, well, not the top, right after the top of the episode where we see this guy heal people, we get the smoking man going to talk to Tina, Mulder's mom.
That's right, at their cabin.
At their cabin, this lake house. They know each other, and they obviously have some sort of relationship.
In the biblical sense.
Well, we don't find that out quite yet, although does imply, there is a little bit of implying that he says he's better at a lot of things than Bill.
Yes. Yeah, so I think by this point, they know that they're going to go in that direction with the character.
Yeah, because Smoking Man starts acting a lot different to Mulder in these episodes.
Yeah.
Because I think, like you said, at this point, they're realizing we're going to eventually make Smoking Man Mulder's dad.
Yeah, do you like that twist?
No, I don't.
I think I just destroyed my ear.
Why, what happened?
I don't know.
You okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear?
Yeah. Okay, well, I think it's okay.
All right.
I kind of stepped on the cord there and created a mess.
So basically, this encounter sends Tina into a stroke, I believe, or some sort of heart attack or something that puts her in the hospital.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
Mulder's super mad, of course, because now he's finding out that Smoking Man was behind this. Tina writes him a little message that he eventually leads him to go to the lake house, where he finds one of those alien weapon things, the knife things.
In a lamp. Yeah.
And online, in the X-Files community, they're calling this thing a stiletto. Now, when I hear stiletto,
high heels?
It's usually used to talk about high heels, but a little research will tell you. It's also
a knife.
Also a knife. Yes. So if you want to know why we keep saying stiletto, it's not because we love shoes. Although
I think most people probably know that.
That is true, that we do love shoes.
Well, I guess I don't have strong feelings about shoes. I mean, I appreciate that they exist.
I feel like you would be a shoe lover, like a lover of shoes.
Why do you say that?
You just seem like a man of good taste.
Well, yeah.
And a man of good taste in shoes.
My good tastes generally don't extend down to my shoes. More of a pragmatist when it comes to my footwear.
There was one thing in this episode that kind of bugged me. Okay. We know that Mulder and Scully have straight up encountered shapeshifters.
Yes.
In the past. So when they're investigating this guy and they can't figure out how one minute he's standing there and then the next minute they're watching this video and there's a new person there but wearing the exact same clothes but standing in the same spot.
Right.
And they're like, where'd he go? He was there, but that guy's wearing the same clothes. What happened?
It's a very good point.
And they're acting like this is a brand new thing. This is a problem with X-Files, and you brought it up in the last episode.
It is.
Mostly with Scully, but here with Mulder too. It's like, you know things. You need to be learning along the way. Otherwise, this is pointless.
Right.
But you keep going back to status quo as if you are clueless on what's going on.
Maybe the writers feel like, oh, we haven't mentioned the shapeshifters for 2 years or something like that at this point.
Yeah.
So the audience probably doesn't remember. So we better just pretend like Mulder and Scully don't either.
For some reason. Now, it appears that these shapeshifters, because we find out there's multiple Jeremiah Smiths.
Yes.
All working at different branches of the Social Security Administration.
Yes.
And they're all kind of responsible for this collecting tissue samples from humans from the smallpox vaccine tests.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Why, if you can choose any face, do they choose to make every one of these guys look exactly the same?
That's a good point, too.
Because Scully, does a quick search on Jeremiah Smith. It pops up with six of them all working for different branches.
And yeah.
They all look the same. They all have the same name. Like, that's suspicious, Smoking Man.
That is suspicious.
They seem to be working for Smoking Man and the Syndicate. So when Jeremiah Smith heals that guy,
Somebody's going to get fired for that one.
Yeah, Smoking Man sends the Men in Black to go get him. So they not arrest him. They just capture him, lock him up, and then he starts shape-shifting and having what was probably the best part of the episode, where he's having this interaction with Smoking Man. And he changes to the face of Deep Throat, and he changes to the face of Bill Mulder. And they originally wrote in a scene where he changed to the face of Melissa Scully. And so they're supposed to be implying through that is that he's changed to all the faces of people that Smoking Man has had a hand in killing recently. But they couldn't get the actress there for some reason, so they just wrote that out.
Yeah.
But what did you think about that scene where they're going back and forth? I have some quotes here, but why don't you mention it real quick?
I didn't remember it that well until you just mentioned it now. But yeah, it's a good scene. I mean, it's a little suspicious that apparently he's only changing into people associated with Mulder. But that's more of a television convenience. It would have been cool if they would have really had a big picture of where they were going with Smoking Man, because we know Smoking Man killed JFK and Martin Luther King. And
well, listen to this.
Yeah.
Now, okay. As we get down to Tunguska and Terma, the next set of episodes, Right before that is the episode, The Musings of the Cigarette Smoking Man, which we skip past. They don't include it.
They should have had us watch that.
Well, there's a reason that they... I did some research on it. There's a reason they don't include it in the mythology episodes.
Why is that?
I think it's dumb. They... because the frame story for that episode is that Frohickey has found this old kind of National Enquirer type article about the cigarette smoking man.
Yeah.
The author isn't... the narrator isn't trustworthy in that story.
Oh, I see.
And so even though we're seeing these different flashbacks, in quotes...
They might not have really
happened. They might not be canon. So the creators do not consider that episode canon.
That is stupid.
I know, really stupid. I think you and I should review it anyways. Yeah. But after we see the whole show, let's watch that episode and see if it lines up with other things. But from what I understand, there are some direct contradictions even within the episode itself.
See, and that's okay. I mean, I think intentional contradiction is an interesting storytelling trope, especially if you're doing something like that. But then say it's canon and let the fans debate it. Give us the framing story. Let us know that this, you know, we can figure out the source might not be trustworthy.
Exactly.
And then let us sift through as fans what we think is true and what's not.
I totally agree. Because this was from a time when they didn't trust fans to be smart.
Right.
And... yeah, they should have just let it be, because I was expecting to get to that episode, and then I saw, like, as I'm flipping through Netflix, I'm seeing we're skipping it. I was like, what?
That's not a good sign.
That is not a good sign. That's a discouraging sign. Here are some cool quotes, abridged by Matt Anderson, in the editing, I should say, between Smoking Man versus Jeremiah Smith, the good one. Smoking Man says, "You're not allowed to put your indulgences ahead of the greater purpose." "I no longer believe in the greater purpose," Jeremiah says. Then Smoking Man says...
the greater purpose being to create alien-human hybrids.
I think it's to prepare for the colonization.
Yes.
Smoking Man says, "Then your fate is just." And he says, "We give them happiness, and they give us authority." And then he goes on to say, this is still Smoking Man, "Science is their religion. They must never believe any differently if the project is to go forward. The question is meaningless, and the outcome irrevocable. The date is set."
Right.
This is all from Smoking Man. So it's kind of crazy. Jeremiah responds by saying, "How many must die at your hand to preserve your stake in the project?"
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting conversation.
Indeed.
I thought that was the best part of the show because it was the most flat out. We can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah.
It does suck, though, knowing it doesn't ultimately pay off.
Exactly. It does.
So...
In fact, the big surprise at the very end of the series is essentially an expanded version of what you just read.
Smoking Man
telling the Mulder and Scully that the aliens are going to colonize in 2012.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, what they revealed in this season 3 finale is the reveal at the end of the whole show.
Yes, a slightly expanded version, but yeah.
Okay. Any more thoughts about this episode before we kind of... I mean, I have a few things I can continue on, but I don't want to hog all the airtime.
No, I'm ready to go on to the next one.
Okay, let me read some more things then.
Okay.
So, Smoking Man is basically going to keep Jeremiah in prison, but for some reason, somebody releases him. I didn't quite understand how he got out of his...
Yeah, I just kind of ignore moments like that on the X-Files.
Because meanwhile, the bounty hunter who we do know is now in the picture, and he's coming to kill Jeremiah Smith, so... Jeremiah goes to Scully, and how he knows where Scully lives, who knows? But he's
phone
like...
Phone book.
Yeah. What?
Phone book, yeah.
He's like, "You're not the one I met before, or that you met before." Wait. "I'm not the Jeremiah Smith that you met before," because the bounty hunter who we know went
killed
in...
that Jeremiah
Smith. No, he went and impersonated Jeremiah Smith Scully at
That's
the FBI.
Right.
And so then this...
Right, because he gives the false confession.
False confession, yep. So good, Jeremiah says, "Come with me, Scully. I can show you some things." And they meet up with Mulder. And then the whole episode ends as the bounty hunter is coming to, I don't know what, kill him?
Yeah.
But that's what it looks like. But I did have an interesting insight here. You know how we always see Mulder chewing sunflower seeds and that's kind of like his thing?
Yeah.
I realized in this episode... that now that we know that Mulder is Smoking Man's son, I think the sunflowers are the equivalent of the cigarettes.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. They both do it out of just as a form to relax themselves when it's high pressure.
Yeah.
And Smoking Man, they make it really obvious. Every time he's in a tense situation, he lights one up.
Yeah.
Fox, we always see him chewing on sunflower seeds. So there it is. Father-son connection.
Yeah.
There was something. Tina was saying something. There was something in this episode. Smoky Man goes to see Mulder at the hospital. He says that he has known Tina since before Mulder was born, and that she contacted him because he had information on the whereabouts of Samantha. This is where Mulder loses it. He holds a gun to his face at the hospital. Remember that whole scene?
Yeah.
That was lame, too, because then a nurse walks by, and he kind of, like, puts the gun behind his back. Yeah, X and Mulder get into a fight in this episode, which is stupid. I hate X.
Yeah, he's
I'm glad
the worst.
He died. Yeah. Okay, so the title of this episode, which again was Talitha Kumi, is an Aramaic phrase. Do you remember what it means? Jesus
little
said it.
Girl.
It says, "Arise, maiden."
Oh, yeah.
A reference to the healing power of Jeremiah Smith, and this is from Mark 5:41. Let's see. I think that's kind of like the most interesting thing I found out that wasn't just straight out from... Oh, Jeremiah Smith did tell Smoky Man in this episode that he was dying of lung cancer. So another power they have besides healing is the ability to know when a human is dying.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else? You seem kind of like you just want to move on.
I'm ready for the next episode.
This episode, as suggested by David Duchovny, was heavily influenced by the Grand Inquisitor, which is a chapter in Dostoevsky's...
Brothers Karamazov.
Yeah. Have you read that?
Oh, yes. That's a great book.
Can you see where the Grand Inquisitor was referenced in here?
Not a little. Not that much. Not that much. Now, you should put that one on your to-read list.
It's a lost book. It's a book of lost.
Yeah, you should read it.
Why do you recommend it to me?
I recommend it to everyone. It's one of the greatest novels ever written.
Okay. Last thing about this, Chris Carter, when writing about this episode, said he decided that this episode's main theme was going to be loyalty. It was decided that the commitment Mulder felt towards the X-Files would be tested by seeing if he would be willing to sacrifice those he cared about, like his mom, Scully, the quest for his sister. In addition, the Smoky Man's allegiances are in question, and he must decide whether or not to heal himself or the cancer. Whether or not to heal himself of cancer using the power of Jeremiah Smith. So maybe he allowed Jeremiah to heal him and then he freed Jeremiah Smith himself? Is that possible?
I have no idea.
Doesn't he die of lung cancer?
No.
No, he gets blown up.
Yeah.
Does the lung cancer thing become an issue ever, or is this the end of that story?
I think that it doesn't ever go anywhere, even if they do some more with it.
It says that Smoky Man chose his self-interest over the syndicate, so he must have let Jeremiah heal him, and then in return, I'll let you loose. All right, let's move on to episode one.
The bees.
Yep, episode one of season four, Herrenvolk. Go ahead, take it away, bees.
So we find out about the bees and the oil and everything.
You're going so fast. This is amazing stuff that ties directly into the movie.
Yeah, this episode and the next two, they have a lot of good stuff, but they both feature things that just bug me. The X-Files
bug, no pun intended.
Yeah, they happen to be examples of annoying bug. That's enough.
Okay, that's enough.
Animal punt. So towards the end of the episode, you know, Jeremiah Smith shows Mulder and Scully the farm and everything, or Mulder the bee colony, and
with the doubles of Samantha and of that blonde kid.
You know, we've had the nice tour, and Mulder's like, "Dude, you gotta tell me more. Just fill me in on what's going on." And Jeremiah Smith is like, "There's no time." And he's like, "Yeah, we're gonna do it now." And Jeremiah's like, "Okay." And then he starts, just as he's about to talk, the bounty hunter comes driving up in his truck, and this is so annoying. Because this is so artificial that we don't want to tell the audience things. We want to leave you in the dark. So we're just going to artificially prevent anyone from sharing information with Mulder. Never mind, they had like a 10-hour car ride up to this place.
Yeah, so they moved up, or they traveled to Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, so Mulder, you know, it's like, hey, we got to pass some time on this road trip. Why don't you fill me in on your life story, Jeremiah? I just give, you know, and a lot of TV shows have this problem. Lost had this problem of artificially withholding information.
That was something that people did bring up a lot, that if the characters would all just sit down and tell everything they know about what they've seen, it would have been stranded a lot faster.
Yeah.
But instead, everybody kind of kept secrets of what they're learning about the mysterious island.
And the problem is that it's not good storytelling. Like, look at how confusing it is to piece these episodes together if you're just watching them without doing, you know, outside research.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... They have a fascinating story to tell, and they're not telling it.
And I kind of think they never tell it.
Exactly. They imply it through the whole thing, but the story never gets told. And that drives me nuts. It's so artificial. It's so ridiculous that this happens again and again. Somebody's about to share information, and then, something happens to prevent them from doing so.
I get what you're saying. I mean, they have to do it because of the show, and they have to keep us interested, but it would be... I'd be okay with it if it eventually pays off, and I'm worried that it's never going to pay off, because even here where we see the bees,
yeah,
and we know that the bees appear in the movie, it's not exactly the same thing. Like, for example, in the movie, remember Scylla gets stung by the bee, and then she collapses and goes into some sort of like coma state or something?
Right.
Well, here, basically, I mean, people, they're not the same type of... whatever bee carrying type of bees. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's something different that isn't, the connection's never really made. Well, this is the last we ever see of these like kid clones.
Right.
I'm not sure what the deal is with them, and why would they have made a billion Samanthas?
Yeah.
Do we know why they have kid clones? Those aren't hybrids. They're just drone workers.
And yeah.
If you're going to make a drone, why not an adult? Why a child?
That is true. Yeah. Well, you know, I disagree with you on one thing. I don't think they have to do it for the sake of storytelling. I think if you're watching these episodes and you knew everything we've been telling you, like as far as what's really going on in all of these, you wouldn't be less intrigued in the show. You'd be more. Like, if you knew that there was this colonization plot and that was spelled out explicitly, you don't throw your hands in the air and go, well, no point watching now. No, you want to see how is this going to play out then? You know, what are the developments going to be between now and when the colonization happens?
Mm-hmm. But we never see that. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Like, well, not only do we never see it, but the sense that the belief that Chris Carter and his team seem to have that withholding information is the way to keep the audience interested is absurd.
Mm. Okay, so after the bee deal, we go back to the bounty hunter stalking Mulder, Scully, and Jeremiah Smith. They somehow kind of escape him. It was super lame.
Yeah.
They just get away. And then it's interesting that Chris Carter said the last episode's theme was loyalty, because when Mulder gets away, he totally leaves Scully in the dust.
That
him
is
and
true.
Jeremiah Smith.
They get
on the boat. They don't even zoom away. It's like... juk, 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 juk. And then Scully's like, what? I'm up. I'm right here.
Yeah.
So he stabbed Mulder before he got on the boat, stabbed the bounty hunter in the back of the neck with his stiletto.
Yeah.
And
it
doesn't work. Why? Do we know why?
Because the script needed it to not work.
But the bounty hunter, it turns out, and I'm going to stand by this, he's actually a super nice guy. I know that you might think this is joking, but this is not a joke. He really only kills when it's part of his mission. For example, he could have killed Scully when... you remember how Mulder called Scully and said exactly where he was going, and the bounty hunter was in the back seat and heard the whole thing? Well, the best thing for bounty hunter to do then is get the information and kill Scully, but he doesn't. So instead, he lets Scully warn Mulder, and then what does Mulder do with that information? Keeps going to where he's going.
Yeah.
That's why the bounty hunter is able to crash his truck into him.
Yeah, but... is it because he's a nice guy, or is it because the script needs Scully to survive?
Okay, I have... I think there's some more things that happen here.
Because that's what I mean by artificial writing.
Okay.
I think that that's bad writing.
I think there was another scene, though, where he could just kill Mulder, but instead he just kind of pushes him away. He doesn't want... maybe it's what you're saying,
yeah.
But I felt more like Bounty Hunter's not that bad. He kind of has a code of honor.
See, I think that if you had a minor character in that car with him, you know, somebody who was just part of these episodes, would have been dead.
You know, he did kill that agent in the first episode we met him in.
Right.
Put him in the trunk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he's not a super nice guy.
No, it's bad writing. It's that we backed our characters into a corner, and those characters need to survive so we can still have a show to broadcast next week. So we're just going to have him not kill them.
Jeremiah does tell Mulder in this episode that the plan is colonization and a new origin of the species. So
yeah.
There's that. X is starting to be found out, so the Syndicate decide to put together a plan to see who is the mole. They find out. Let's just kind of tell the story out of order. They found out it's X, whatever his real name is, and they kill him right in Mulder's hallway.
Yay!
Which I was happy about.
Yeah, yeah. It's about time.
In his last act as a human living.
Yeah.
He writes in his own blood the initials of SRSG or something like that.
Yeah.
And that, at first I was like, what does this even stand for? Turns out it sends Mulder to someplace in New York, I think, where he meets his new informant.
Yeah.
So kind of like took all of the emotion of losing this guy who's been helping him all along dies pretty quickly, because in the same episode he finds his new informant who gives him a picture of his the sister clones.
Yeah, and again, this is bad writing. It's like, is there just an informant club out there and they've all agreed to help Mulder but only one at a time?
But we know ultimately where this is gonna go. You remember?
No, Marina? I don't remember. No,
Marina's bad.
Oh, okay.
Her and Krychek are lovers.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Well, okay, so even the informant club has its own weaknesses, but still, it's the same thing they did with Deep Throat. They kill Deep Throat, realize, oh, we still need somebody to feed Mulder information, but not actually give him the whole story. You know, and again, this is to keep playing off this artificial withholding information rant. You know, we've had 2.5 seasons now of X freaking out every time Mulder wants to meet with him. You know what he needed to do?
Stop showing up?
No. He needs to just print everything out in this huge folder, hand it to Mulder, say, this is everything I know, don't call me. And now Mulder reads it, and he knows everything. And so, like, the plan X has to kind of help Mulder but withhold all this information so Mulder keeps coming to him is the single worst plan he could possibly have given his motives.
I just realized, as I'm looking at my own notes while you were talking there, I was listening partially, but here's what I'm realizing about X-Files. They keep giving us the same information but in sort of different ways.
Yep.
So you feel like you're learning something new, but when I'm saying down here to tell the audience, okay, here's what we learned new. So here, I wrote this down. X tells Scully that the records that she's looking at have to do with a smallpox eradication program. But I'm thinking back to our last episode. We talked about this.
In Paperclip, yeah. We learned that.
Yeah, and we find out that the aliens and clones have an immunity to the bees. But we kind of know that there is something that they've been working on, some sort of thing like that. But maybe that's more in the next episode. So, maybe what they were really good at is making you think they were telling you something new, but not really telling you something new.
I think you are correct.
So through this, Scully figures out that everyone who got the smallpox vaccine was given a genetic tag. Humans are being cataloged, tagged, and inventoried.
Which, again, we already knew.
Yeah, because we saw the files where that all happened, or where that was all being stored. Bounty Hunter says that Jeremiah Smith is a traitor to the project. Bounty Hunter says he respects Mulder and his willingness to trade his life for his mother's, or even Jeremiah's. So Bounty Hunter's a good guy, Ben. I don't know what you're thinking.
Nope, he's not.
Scully has a good quote where she says, nothing happens in contradiction to nature, only in the contradiction to what we know about it, and that's a place to start. That's where the hope is.
Yeah.
You like that?
I like that quote.
Yeah, me too. All right, that's all I got for this. I think at the end, Tina gets healed by the Bounty Hunter under the
orders of
Smoking Man.
Yeah.
Oh, the Smoking Man does say that the fiercest enemy is a man who has nothing left to lose, so that's why they have to save Tina, but I think it's because Smoking Man likes Tina.
Oh, yeah. He wants to take over where Bill left off, so to speak.
Let's see. I'm trying to look at my additional notes that I got from my further research. Samantha is described by Chris Carter as being the lifeblood of the series ever since the second season premiere. This episode that we just watched or just talked about features scenes filmed using a swarm of bees, which caused problems due to the difficulty of taming and directing the bees.
I could see where that would be trouble.
Oh, in fact, the actress that plays Samantha got stung while filming, but you know how she's not supposed to talk or have show any emotion? So they were still in mid-scene, and so she couldn't react, and so she kept it in until right after they cut. And then she's like, I got stung.
Okay. 100 times, and I'm allergic.
Yeah, that's all I got for
this. And that's the last time we see that actress in
the show. Yeah, she's dead. Is that true? Do we see her anymore?
I don't know if that would be pretty morbid if we found out she died of bee stings in this episode.
We didn't tell this. Herrenvolk, the episode title comes from the German word for master race.
Yeah.
The tagline for this episode is everything dies instead of the usual truth is out there. The phrase is uttered by the bounty hunter to Mulder during the episode. During the production of Herrenvolk, Cutter had already begun the pre-production phases of the film, which would be released in 1998. So just in case you're interested, the original air date of the episode we just talked about was October 4th, 1996. So 2 years later, we would see some of this bee stuff come back in the movies.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, on to episode 8 of season 4, Tunguska, which is a two-part episode, like I said, called Terma. So I mentioned this in past episodes, but this was the first episode I ever saw actually on television. So it took me 4 seasons to really catch on to this show. So I thought this would end up being one of my favorites for nostalgic reasons.
It did not.
I didn't think that this was a great two-parter. I still really like that last scene of all the black oil spilling on Mulder.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is a great episode.
No.
In general.
It's not. And let's start with the framing device. Guess what, Matt?
What?
Mulder's missing.
What?
And guess what? Scully's being interrogated about
it.
What? Have you ever seen that before in The X-Files?
No.
I mean, it's like, come on. This is just so lazy. We've seen this exact same scenario. And granted, you know, this we're in front of the U.S. Senate, so it's got a little bit more oomph behind it.
Yeah.
But still.
She's going to lose her badge, Ben.
Right. We've seen this thing so many times where Mulder's gone missing at the start of some two-part episode. Scully's being interrogated by it. I don't know where Mulder is. You know, blah, 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 blah. And it just goes on and on. Then the end of the two-part episode, we get back to that scene. Mm-hmm. And here comes Mulder. And it's just enough.
Yeah.
Bad writing.
So you kind of hate X-Files now. Do you feel like you like it less on this rewatch?
No, I mean, I still like it. There's things that are frustrating me that I think you don't notice.
When you're young and watching it for the first
time. When you're young and watching it, or watching the whole season straight through. I think when you're isolating these episodes, some of the flaws are definitely showing.
So before. Do you feel like if this show aired today, you'd probably not be a fan?
I think it would fail. I don't think anybody would be a fan. I think it's a product of its era.
It was so different.
It was. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that doesn't make it a bad show, but it's very much a product of its era.
Let's give some quick bullet points here. So basically, after that framing device, Mulder and Scully are just doing a regular case, which is unusual. They're just hunting on some regular terrorists, not alien terrorists.
Yeah, that's a bit odd.
They got a tip from somebody, and we find out that tip is from Krycek, who's unlocked from that silo we last saw him in. So it turns out these terrorists somehow came across him in North Dakota and they freed him, so now he's working for them.
North Dakota is that big site of terrorist activity.
Yeah, exactly.
Just this random group of terrorists just driving through North Dakota random silos.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So Krycek says he wants to find Smoky Man. He seems kind of like a good guy at first, which obviously is not going to last. He tells Mulder there is no truth. These men are just making it up as they go along. They're the engineers of the future. So there is some kind of like cool phrases in here, but he essentially leads Mulder and Scully to try to find this diplomat who's coming to America who has a special diplomatic pouch. And inside that pouch, Ben, what do we find? A moon rock. No, it's not moon rock. It's from Mars.
Yeah.
It's a Martian rock.
With black oil.
Black oil inside. And wisely, the scientist doctor who they hire to help them carves into it.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a precious rock from space.
Yeah.
Let me get my saw.
Exactly. Well, and talk about, you know, at the beginning with that, the TSA agent or whoever takes him into the room at the guy into the room at the airport.
Oh my gosh.
Here's your canister that you're saying is filled with dangerous
he's
material.
He's like, don't touch it. It's dangerous. He takes out and then drops it. On accident, of course.
You're so stupid.
And so then the black oil swarms, you know, the kind of the living black oil swarms that guy and swarms the other diplomat who had it. So not a great plan.
No.
There's a lot of stupid things in here. I mean, both of those, I mean, all these people that should be doing a good job at their job is a scientist who carved into it. The TSA, like, has he never handled an item before?
Right.
It slipped off his hand in about 4 seconds.
The guy was, you know, like, just wait. Don't touch it. Don't touch it.
And I don't get, again, assistant director Skinner. He's the assistant director.
Yeah.
And Mulder has this guy. And so he's like, let's just keep him here. Let's chain him to my balcony. Wait, that's the best plan?
So true.
And so then...
Just counting on nobody looking up from the street level.
And then they go to work and they leave him handcuffed to a balcony. They're like, this is normal. Why not put him in an actual prison?
Prison. Or if you're going to keep him in Skinner's apartment, you know, maybe you find somewhere inside where people aren't going to see him.
So
where he can't stand up and wave for help. I've been kidnapped.
Exactly.
I'm in apartment 23A.
So then somebody breaks into Skinner's apartment looking for the moon rock or the Martian rock. And... he thinks he hears something in the balcony, so he goes and looks around, but not so fast. Krychek reaches up, because he still has both his hands, and tosses a guy over the balcony.
Yeah.
So now Skinner's being investigated, because somebody got thrown from his room.
Yes.
This is stupid.
Not a good plan.
Then, as if that wasn't bad enough.
That'd be really ineffective in your apartment, Matt.
I know.
You're on the ground floor.
As if that wasn't bad enough, when Mulder finds out he has to go to Russia to do some more investigation...
Yeah,
he's a no. But wait, his first plan is I'm gonna leave you in the car. I'll roll down the window for you. I'm just gonna handcuff you here to the steering wheel.
Yeah,
and that is his actual plan.
Right.
And he starts walking away, and he finds out. And for whatever reason, of all the languages to choose, Krychek decides to swear at him in Russian, which clues Mulder in. Oh, you know Russian? That may be useful since I'm going to Russia.
Yeah.
And so he decides to bring him with.
It's a good thing nobody ever goes to those park and fly lots. Oh, wait.
It's a good thing that Krychek decided to swear in a foreign language.
Exactly. Had to do it because Fox is broadcast TV.
What was Mulder's plan, though, if he didn't have somebody to translate for him? And why? And even if you...
Yeah.
Like, would it be better to go without a translator or with a person you do not trust? Because you have to trust him to translate.
Yeah.
And we can see how that worked out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just feel like it was just like one weird thing after another.
Yeah, doesn't like every time Krychek translates for Mulder, somebody tells him, you know, that guy's not
he's not telling,
he's not translating correctly for you.
Yeah.
Though, again, I think maybe bringing him along is better than leaving him in a park and fly lot.
I guess that might be true.
Yeah.
I took the least notes for this because essentially they find this slave labor camp. They get caught, of course.
Yep.
And then the best, I mean, this is a cool scene. They're all held down by like chicken wire or chicken fence. And they turn on the pipes.
Yeah.
And out of the pipes doesn't come water, does it, Ben?
It's black oil.
Black oil comes splashing and crawls into Mulder.
And that's an important piece of information.
Why?
Because, you know, we're learning that other countries are doing tests on how to immunize their populace against the black oil.
Well, yeah, they don't make it clear, but just so you, the listener,
can... Of course they don't.
But they never actually say what's happening in these episodes.
You have to figure it out.
But you're right. Yeah, it's basically an like the space race, just like the arms race. Both Russia and the United States are working to build up their own vaccine to the black oil. So they're exposing people like Mulder and Krychek to it and then giving them the vaccine to see if they can get it out. But, I mean, they must have figured it out because...
Yeah.
Like, I think they have it under control. Why do they keep doing it to people?
Right.
Just to make sure it's still working.
Probably still refining it.
Yeah.
So. Or maybe it's some diluted version of the black oil. Who knows?
It couldn't have, yeah.
And then eventually they get their arms chopped off.
And I don't really know why that
is. Immunizes.
It's in the next episode. Immunization.
Immunizes them to something. I'm not entirely sure what.
Yeah, I don't think they ever tell us. It's kind of cool to see like the group of guys all there, but
that's how we get Krychek's fake hand with the tea bag, which is kind of cool looking.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Here's a note about this. One of the series writers, John Sheban, felt it was natural to create an arms race like story between the United States and Russia, being that the Cold War had ended a few years earlier when the show originally aired.
Yeah.
The writers desired to expand the series mythology globally, a concept that continued in the fifth season and the movie. So, Ben, do you feel like moving to a global scale story was good for the overall relevance of the series, or was it a negative?
I think it's a good idea, but like you said, they never make it clear what's going on, so that at the end of the day, if you're a casual viewer, especially somebody who's just watching these on TV, all you got out of this episode is that the Russians are doing some weird stuff.
Exactly. And that's all I got out of it when I was a kid.
Exactly, yeah.
So, okay, we get to the... Let's just move on. The next episode opens with some crazy Dr. Kevorkian type scene.
Right.
Where there's an old lady who wants to die. So he injects her with something, and then the black oil appears? Do you... I don't remember why this is important.
I think it's something along the lines of that the similar experiments are going on in the U.S. in these nursing homes.
Oh,
and somehow
yeah,
when she died,
yeah.
The black oil came out. I don't know.
The guy in the prison, yeah, in the cell next to Mulder calls it the black cancer. But I don't think that phrase comes back. Do you?
No. It's a Russian thing.
Yeah, it's just a Russian thing.
Yeah. And then apparently, you know, Krycek hires this assassin who goes around and is killing all the old people who are part of these tests.
Yeah, he was a former member of the KGB,
yeah.
Which, again, they never say that on the show. But when I was doing my additional notes reading online, they call him a former member of the KGB.
Yeah. So is Krycek doing that just to get back, like, to mess up Smoking Man's tests? Or what's the motive for him hiring
this guy? I don't know, but if he was... I have no idea, because if you really think it all the way through... So he somehow, he hired this guy in Russia while also working in North Dakota with those terrorists.
Yeah.
While also being imprisoned by Skinner and Mulder. And then he also, he let himself get caught.
Yeah.
I'm not positive the timeline works out perfectly, but maybe it does.
I think this is very common in the X-Files, though, that, you know, we get into the middle of this episode and we see this old Russian guy going around killing old people and we know it's bad. And we get to the end of the episode, and we find out that Krycek hired him. And we know that's really significant.
Because Krycek is bad.
Yes. But the why of either of those events is very unclear.
Okay, yeah. That KGB guy that you're talking about, he kills this lady who was like with a bunch of horses. You remember that scene?
Yeah.
So they never really make it clear in the show. But again, just by reading what the creators are saying, tell me if you knew this. She was one of the people that had been working. She was a smallpox expert, and she was helping them make the vaccine.
I had no idea.
And that's why he killed her.
Yeah, so Krycek seems like he's trying to shut down the syndicate's tests.
But then Well Manicured Man, who maybe was a lover of this woman,
yeah,
was really sad she got killed. And then it seemed like he was mad at Smoking Man about it, like Smoking Man had done it.
Well, Smoking Man failed to take out Krycek. I don't know. It's a mess. It's a mess. We're nearing the halfway point of the show, and they've made a mess.
Okay, here's the explanation that those guys in the forest gave about the arm thing. They said, no arm, no tests. If you don't have an arm...
Which doesn't make sense.
If you don't have an arm, they can't test you. Like, well, can't they just vaccinate your other arm?
Well, there's that, and then it's also that the test involves them spraying oil on your face.
Yeah, I think like, first you get the oil, and then they... give you the shot in the smallpox area.
If there's any listeners who have only one arm, have you ever had an experience of being turned down for a vaccine because you're missing an arm? Because that's essentially what we're being told here.
Yeah, exactly.
I think any vein will do. I think quadriplegics can still get shots.
Oh, okay. Here's something Will Mackard Man says. How could the Russians know we are working on our own inoculations? Only six of us knew. ?
Yeah, so maybe he's assuming Smoking Man is the one who's doing it because he doesn't trust him. Clearly it's Krycek. I don't know.
Oh, here we go. The KGB goes back to the nursing home that was at the beginning of the episode. It looks like he's injecting people to kill the black oil in all of them.
Yeah.
So I think you're right there.
Yeah.
Terma is a place in North Dakota. So that's what this episode is named after, I guess. Okay, this is where I really don't understand. I had to read to find out what was going on. But they go to this like oil place where KGB turns the faucet on, but it's not just like a little bit of oil. It's like a huge spurt of oil. A geyser of oil. Now, tell me the truth. I know that I've read, so I know what was happening. Can you tell me why that happened? What did that scene?
I have no idea.
Just take a
I mean, watching it, you just know that oil shooting in the air, we've learned to associate oil with being bad. Yeah. We know that Mueller needs to catch the KGB guy, and the KGB guy's getting away. And we know all that's bad, but the why, again, is very elusive.
Here's what I wrote before I found out what actually happened. He's in the exact same place in Canada where the... Or sorry, let me go back to this. It's in Alberta, Canada, so same place where the bee colony is. The Russian guy... Who's the KGB? I didn't know he was KGB, so my notes always say the Russian guy.
Yeah.
KGB guy says his work is done, but all that I saw him do was get rid of a bunch of oil that wasn't filled with the alien. I forgot to mention before, but the KGB guy took the Mars rock.
Okay.
Krychuk was the one that hired the Russian guy. These are just my notes from the end. He has a fake arm. Meanwhile, Smoking Man and Senator Sorensen are reviewing files together and throwing them away. And Senator Sorensen is the one that was interrogating Scully. So that's the end of the episode. So here is, Ben, what happened. This is what that oil business was all about.
Okay.
Let's see. I have to find my notes. Okay. The agents attempt to track down the KGB guy following the trail of murders. However, the assassin is able to outwit the agents and destroys the last of the oil containing rocks seen in the previous episode in an oil well explosion. He returns to Russia, where it is revealed he was hired by Krychuk. So, again, he was destroying the last of the oil-containing rocks seen in the previous episode in an oil well explosion.
That seems like a stretch. I mean, it fits, but how you get there from the episode is beyond me.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm really confused by all that.
Wow.
Okay, so here are some my additional notes. I think I said this in the last episode. Just in case you don't know, when I say additional notes, that's Wikipedia. these are the things I needed help to learn more about. So, several scenes in Terma were inspired by the novel of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, while its tagline changed to E per si muva from the usual The Truth Is Out There. It is a reference to Galileo Galilei's investigation by the Roman Inquisition. I know I said it wrong.
You're doing good with these names tonight.
What is it? What's Galileo's last name? How do you say it?
I don't know.
Galileo Galilei?
Sure.
Remember when he was getting asked about the sun?
Yeah.
Remember
that was our finest hour. We Catholics are proud of that one.
Oh, yeah. This is you. Ooh, sorry.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Sorry about that. But basically, that phrase that is the tagline is how he responded. I can't remember what it translates to, do you?
I have no idea.
E per si muva, and yet it moves the earth.
Yeah.
Not the sun.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
The earth moves.
According to 25% of all Americans, it's the other way around. Did you see that study?
No.
So 21 in 4 Americans believe that the sun revolves around the earth.
That's not good. Terma features
here for our public education system.
Terma features a climatic explosion at an oil refinery wellhead requiring the physical effects staff to ignite a 300-foot plume of flammable liquid. Okay. Give me your response to this episode. Or the two-parter.
Yeah, I think it's a mess. I think they're relying on old tropes. I think that by this point in the series, their lack of explanation, their returning to the well of these storytelling devices they've tried so many times, the amount of balls that they have now spinning in the air, all of that is starting to catch up to them. Not nearly as much as it will by the end of the series, but the cracks are starting to show.
Oh, I missed some of my things I meant to say. The title Terma is a set of Buddhist teachings hidden from the world, and Chris Carter thought that represented the secrets being kept by the syndicate. And I had mentioned Alexander Solzhenitsyn's novel, but I didn't tell you what the novel is. Would you like to hear the title?
Yes, I would.
The Gulag Archipelago.
Archipelago?
Yeah, what is that?
It's like a series of islands.
Oh, okay. Well, the Gulag Archipelago.
Very nice.
And One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
I think maybe Krychek's got you beat when it comes to those Russian words.
Last thing I have here is that some critics have complained that these episodes were a mess and that the plot should have focused on the murder of the Will Manicure man's doctor friend.
Yeah.
Do you think that would have been more interesting to find out who this person was? I mean, they never explained that she was even really part of the syndicate stuff, but if you read between the lines, I guess it was there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem when you have a show dedicated to mysteries. is that eventually the mysteries pile up so much that nobody can even keep track of what they don't know.
Yes. I don't know what I don't know.
Exactly.
We did. So two of the episodes we watched today had different taglines than The Truth Is Out There, but in between these episodes, there was another one in the episode Tolico, which we're not going to ever watch probably for this review. Yeah. The tagline instead was Deceive, Inveigle, Obfuscate.
Obfuscate?
Yeah, what's this word right here? Inveigle?
Inveigle? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. Anyways, but so that's the only one. So far, every single different tagline has appeared in our episodes until now. So
very nice.
Ben, what do we know? What do we know so far? What are the updates from these episodes?
Oh, so what additional stuff have we learned?
I already mentioned the aliens have healing power, yep. And they can sense disease in at least humans.
I think we see a little bit more of how the black oil is playing into these smallpox tests. It kind of connects those two storylines. We know that Krychek is out of the silo, which I guess is important.
We know that the black oil could be transported in Mars rocks.
Yes. We know that Chris Carter is quickly getting in over his head. And we know that this was not the best written pair of X-Files episodes.
Yeah, not the best episodes. So we'll probably do I don't have the list handy. I'll get it. So you do your real-life X-File.
Okay.
And I'll give you some music for that. And then I'll, in the meantime, find the next four episodes we'll do. Let's just keep it at four. And it won't be the next episode. Well, let's give it some time. I could use a little bit of a break.
I think so.
All right. Are you ready for...
You need to have a little time to forget between X-Files episodes to really get the full effect.
Yeah. That might be true. Yes. Because the further away, apart they are, it's like, oh, this is kind of new.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
it's not new.
Exactly.
This is the same thing that just happened.
It's time for real X-Files, life X-Files. I forgot what we were saying.
Yeah, I couldn't remember either.
Yeah. So today I actually have a series of real life X-Files straight from the Middle East. Now, the Middle East, of course, a hotbed of political tension.
Yes.
Especially between Israel and its Arab neighbors. And I found this real life X-File because I thought to myself, you know, we got the bees that come in. So there's got to be some kind of real life X-Files involving animals. And sure enough, there is a plethora of animal-related conspiracy theories involved with the Middle East controversies. Now, Matt, this is the type of stuff where if you saw this in an X-Files episode, you would turn the TV off at the end and say, that was such a stupid premise for an episode because these are that dumb. But the fact that they're in real life...
Make them awesome?
Make them awesome. So... I just have these under Israel animal conspiracy theories.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the animal involved.
Yes.
And then read the conspiracies associated with that animal.
Okay.
So we start with sharks. According to quote-unquote famous diver Captain Mustafa Ismail, Israel has planted GPS homing devices in sharks, causing them to attack Egyptians.
Oh, that's mean.
Now, never mind the fact that GPS and homing devices are two very different things. Next, we go to birds. And there's quite a few under birds because apparently Israel's Arabic neighbors have a proud history of arresting birds.
Okay.
Performing citizen arrests on birds. I'm not making that up. So, last October, Hezbollah detained an eagle. They arrested an eagle for being an Israeli spy.
Okay.
Turkey arrested an eagle or a bird for the same reason. But this one has a happier ending. They thought that it had some X-ray intelligence equipment inside of it. They X-rayed the bird, realized it just had normal bird parts inside of it, and released the bird.
Okay.
So that one had a happy ending. And then back to Egypt again. An Egyptian fisherman found a stork, presumably off the coast of Egypt, believing that there was a camera planted on it when it was really just an animal tracker, he performed a citizen's arrest.
Good work.
On that bird. He did his duty as a proud Egyptian citizen.
Weird.
Just picturing all of, you know, this Egyptian guy marching the stork into the local police station. Next, we have not just rats, but super rats.
Okay.
So I know you've never been to Israel.
I have not.
I have been to
Israel.
You've been to Israel. So old city, Jerusalem, beautiful place, very historic, and apparently the home to Arab-killing super rats. So the story goes that Israel bred rats with the ability to kill people when they bite, and made them immune to rat poison, released them into the old city. Now, you might say, well, wait a second, Ben. This seems like a terrible plan, because there are both Arabs and Israelis in the old city. Well,
yeah.
Israel went the extra mile, trained them to just attack the Arabs.
Whoa, that's really smart. That was good thinking.
Squirrels!
Wait.
Squirrels! No, I'm just going to read you the story. I got this story off of an Iranian blog.
Okay.
So the headline is, Iran arrests 14 squirrels for being spies.
Okay.
What? I can't even read it the same face. Iranian intelligence operatives recently detained over a dozen squirrels found within the nation's borders, claiming the rodents were serving as spies for Western powers determined to undermine the Islamic Republic. In recent weeks, intelligence operatives have arrested 14 squirrels within Iran's borders. The squirrels were carrying spy gear. And were stopped before they could act, thanks to the alertness of our intelligence services.
Oh my gosh.
Iranian police commander Esmail Ahmadi Mokadim confirmed the report, saying that a number of squirrels had been caught bearing foreign spy gear within Iran's borders. Jellyfish!
What? It keeps getting better.
Jellyfish. Once again, Israel, using their unique animal training capabilities, has trained jellyfish to kill Arabs and then release them off of the coast of Egypt.
Okay.
And finally, last but not least, mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah, these are dangerous.
So an Arab scientist was studying mosquitoes, and in the midst of his studies, committed suicide.
Whoa.
And this was, it's not entirely clear to me how, but this was somehow involved with Israel training the mosquitoes to induce people studying them to commit suicide.
Okay.
So, as always, things tense in the Middle East.
Very tense.
With the animal population.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So there's your real life X-File for the week.
My favorite was squirrels with spy gear.
The 14 squirrels. I like that there was a group of squirrels. It wasn't just one. They released a troop.
And Ben, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
It's sci-fi it is. Christian story time.
Now, again, you know, I just want to say that this isn't going to be Disney World level. I mean, so this is a one-off. This is a standalone episode.
Okay.
But if you enjoy stories of me suffering, you will enjoy this. So, about a few months ago, Annie tells me that she has signed the children up for a community ed basketball program. And she says, and I want you to come.
That's a good idea. Watch your kids play some sports.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was like, oh, I don't really like to go to those things, but okay, I'll do it. I'll come watch my kids. And so a few months go by, and, you know, then it's like a few days before, and she's like, yeah, just to remind you, you know, on Tuesday night, we've got this community ed basketball thing. So I'm like, okay. I've got on my calendar. I know we're doing this. And it's like a 3-week thing.
Okay.
So the day of, it's the afternoon of, it's like 1:00. And I, you know, I just ask her, you know, so just out of curiosity, did you want me to come every week or just tonight? I just want to know so I know what my schedule is going to be. And she goes, well, probably every week because it's a parent-child class.
Oh.
And I said, what? You mean I have to participate? Yeah, it's like the parents and the children play basketball together. I don't want to play basketball. I just want to watch.
Okay.
And so I was, you know, not happy about that. And so I'm going through all my day and I'm kind of dreading this community ed class tonight because I really don't want to play basketball. I don't like playing basketball. I'm happy to watch my kids play, but I don't want to take a stupid class. I don't want to take a class. But we have to leave at like 5:30 or something like that, which is usually our dinner time. So Annie has made she's going to make pork chops in the crock pot so that we have dinner ready to go. You know, we have dinner, we can eat it. Easy thing. Don't worry about making anything big or having it done at a particular time. Just when we're ready to eat, the pork chops will be ready. Annie comes down to my office about 3 o'clock. And she said, well, I put the pork chops in the crock pot, but I didn't turn it on a few hours ago. Do you think that they're still good? And we do a quick Google search, confirms that they are not. So now going and getting dinner beforehand is in our schedule. So I say, okay, we're just going to go. We'll go through the Arby's drive-thru. And, you know, I'm feeling annoyed at this point. Because now we
you're hungry.
I'm hungry.
You're looking forward to pork chops.
I was looking forward to pork chops.
You have to play basketball.
Exactly. So it's mounting up. So we get in the car to leave. Yeah, the class starts at 6:30. It's 5:30. That gives us enough time to get through Arby's, you know, eat in the car, get to class. I have the timing worked out perfectly. Mm-hmm. I turn the key. Her gas light is on.
No.
And I said, why is your gas light on? Well, I guess I needed to get gas. I said, why didn't you tell me that? Now we should have left sooner than this. You know, why? Now, like, I had the whole timing planned out perfectly. Mm-hmm. Now we don't have enough time. But what are we going to do? So I, you know, I kind of think, I'm thinking through, like, okay, what do we need to do? What do we need to do? And I'm feeling extra annoyed now. You know, so I say, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to drop you off at Arby's. And then I will go get gas while you are getting the food. Oh, okay. Okay. So we do that. Drop her off at Arby's. Drive to the gas station. Lines. So it's like, okay, I'm not going there because there's just lines everywhere. And there, it's going to take too long. So I go to the second gas station. I get out. Nobody there. So this one's in good shape. I get out. I put my card in. I, you know, select my fuel type. Gas pump doesn't work. Does not work. So now it's like, okay, I'm going to see if I can find another gas station. I can't find another one. So now I go back to...
And it's freezing outside.
It's freezing outside.
Like, what day was this?
Oh, it was a couple weeks ago.
Okay, so in the midst of our blizzardy weather here.
Yeah,
okay.
This was a very cold night. Okay. Very cold and windy. So I've now been to two gas stations. And I wasn't planning on going to any. But I've now been to two gas stations, and I'm freezing. And so I go back and I... you know, I pick Annie up because now it's time for to pick her up from Arby's.
Wait, don't you have two vehicles?
Yeah, but we didn't know that we needed to take two vehicles.
No, I'm saying, why don't you, just instead of taking the one that didn't have any gas, why don't you take the one that had gas?
Well, that one doesn't have, like, it's my car, and I only have one kid's seat in it, and so we would have had to, like, move get the kids. Seats. Yeah. At that point, it's just easier to stay in this one.
So do you not let your kids in your car?
No, I do.
Okay, just check it. Okay, so second, you've already been to two gas stations. You're looking for a third.
Yeah, and then I can't find the third, so I go back, pick up Annie. Oh, thank you for getting gas. I didn't get the gas yet, you know, and so I'm mad now.
Wait, what happened to the third one?
There was no third one. Oh. I couldn't find it.
Okay.
So now I go back to the one with the lines, and there's a spot open. So I get in there, and I, you know, I'm so mad outside and everything, and I finally get filled up, and, you know, and this now it's time to...
Well, so she tried to be nice to you and you were mean to her?
She didn't get gas. She didn't tell me we needed gas. My aggravation level's just through the ceiling.
Okay.
So we find that, you know, all that drama. And so we show up at the class. And I just want to be done. I don't want to go to the stupid class. And so we get in the class and, you know, we put our coats down and everything. And it's a few minutes before the class is going to start. So we made it in plenty of time.
Oh, good.
Whew, thank God. Yeah. I would have hated to miss basketball class. So the kids get a couple basketballs and they're bouncing them around before class starts. And within seconds, they've both hurt themselves. Just dribbling the basketballs. They don't know how to dribble, so they bounce. It goes right in their faces. And so now class has not started, and Ellie hates the class. She's just miserable. And Owen's not too thrilled about it either. So now it's time to start the basketball class. And the teacher comes in. And the teacher is an out-of-shape 14-year-old girl.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't have high standards for community ed because it's community ed. But here's my standard, is that somebody teaching a basketball class should be able to beat me in basketball, because I'm probably the worst basketball player on the planet, and I could have, you know, I would have skunked her. It would have been no contest whatsoever. Wow. If we played one-on-one. So it was bad. So Ellie's mad, and I'm mad, and we're all getting mad, and it's time for class to start, and she comes in the
middle.
How
was Owen doing? Did he like it?
He was okay at this point so far. And, everybody come to the middle of the room. We're going to do warm-up stretches. I'm like, I'm not going to do stupid warm-up stretches.
You told your coach that?
No, I'm saying it in my head. So raise your hands above your head. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to sit there and stretch before a 3 to 5 year old basketball class. This is ridiculous.
Well, I think the point is they're teaching the kids good skills.
I don't stretch before I go on 50 mile bike rides.
Probably should.
Yeah, probably should. But the point is, I'm not going to stretch.
Okay, okay.
So then it's like, oh, now we're going to do some running, you know, and so Ellie's just, she's done at this point. She doesn't want anything to do with it. And then all the obnoxious adults are coming around trying to get us to be involved. And it's just like, look, we don't want to be involved. We don't want to be involved.
Wait, was Annie playing too?
Annie was hanging out with Owen. But like me and Ellie, we're on the same vibe right now.
Okay, so neither of you want to be involved.
Neither. Both Ellie and I are done.
This is only night one.
This class. This is within 5 minutes of night one.
Okay.
This is within 5 minutes. So, you know, then Ellie decides she needs to go out for a while, and we're walking around the halls and everything, and then the old lady who's in charge of community ed comes out, is something wrong?
She said that to you?
Yeah. It's like, no, we just needed a break. We just needed a break.
Okay.
It's like, I'm not going to sit there and take crap from this community ed lady who's about 9,000 years old.
Okay.
So I'm not going to do that.
So she was, just to be clear, she was just checking up to make sure everything was okay. And you were mad at her.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we come back in, like, now they're practicing throwing the ball at each other. It's like, there's no basketball skills going on whatsoever in this worthless class. And then you've got all these jock dads out there acting like they were one step away from the NBA. It's like, look, dude, stop acting like you're Michael Jordan reborn. You're in a 3 to 5 year old community ed basketball class. Get over yourself.
Okay.
You know, and then at this point, Owen decides that he's jealous because Ellie got to go out of the room. So now Owen wants to go out of the room with me, which once again provokes questions from the community ed director when she sees me walking around. She's like, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone. I don't want to be here. I don't want to talk to you. My kids don't want to be here. So now the situation is that of our two kids, we have the one who is moderately enjoying it, who's now out of the class, and in the class is Ellie, who is hating every single second of this miserable basketball experience. And you know, so then bring Owen back in, and now it's like, oh, we're gonna toss the ball through hula hoops. It's like, this is just ridiculous. And at this point, Owen doesn't want to go. Now he's mad about the class. Ellie's mad about the class. We're probably 15 minutes into this 45 minute class, and I look at Annie and I say, I think we should leave. And so
and what did she say?
She said, yeah. So we went and got our stuff, we left the basketball class. We walk out to the van after being interrogated again by the community ed director. You're leaving? Yeah, we're leaving. You put on a crap product. Of course we're leaving.
And
we get in the car, and Andy says, you were right. And I said, should I hit the music?
Oh, no.
The end.
Did you hit the music?
I didn't have it with me.
I feel like after that story, I should hit the music.
It was a miserable experience. Don't do community ed. I want everyone to listen to me. Don't do community ed.
It's not so bad sometimes.
It's a waste of time. You'll be miserable.
I'm sure there's some good community ed experiences out there.
Not that I have. And I told Annie on the way home, this is why I don't like to do things. This is what happens when you leave the house. Bad things happen. Don't leave the house. Don't do community ed.
All right, Ben, what's coming up next week? Stand? Should we do the stand?
Yeah, we can do the stand.
Next week, we'll talk about the stand and more sci-fi news. Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Betty Bono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Yeah, goodbye.
Signing off.